go on and pass this, divide into pairs and fill this out. This is a continuum from your response of being very excited about different things concerning graduation to being very hesitant. And so spend a few minutes discussing this with your other pair, and then we'll get back together and go on into the meat of the workshop. What time is that? Am I right?
I have about 7 till now.
Where your response is.
You're closer over to. Yeah, you may not be at one of your strengths, maybe somewhere.
How many minutes? We're running over time already, but
yeah.
I wonder if
you should have that much room yet.
Okay.
Which one is this?
Maybe I should wait until I finish talking because I'll start reading it.
Yeah. You have about one more minute to finish up. Y'all already finished. Finished.
We had to add extra room on that. Yeah, I had to go around.
Well, needless to say, I won't ask what was your most excited one. Depends on where you're located, too. Just due to time schedule, if we could come on back together, I think there's a few of you that haven't finished, and maybe you can get back together with your partner and finish. I heard some of the guys say they needed to put extra room on the one about meeting potential marriage partner prospects. There wasn't quite enough room on the excitement end. But go around the sheet several times. But hopefully, probably, you don't need something like this to begin to get in touch with your feelings concerning graduation. But this was the purpose of that, to have some fun sharing what was ahead for you and areas where you were really excited and areas where perhaps there was the feelings of hesitancy. And this is not going to be necessarily an umbrella workshop. As I was trying to think through objective-wise, there were so many things that we could have covered. And when John told me at first it was going to be 3 hours, I thought, 3 hours together? Gosh, that's a long time. And yet when I began to think of the things that we should cover and possibly discuss, the 3 hours became less and less long. But if I could give you just a short overview, we're going to try to project you into as close a similar life situation as what I think you'll be. And yet, I realize as I say that, every one of your situations are going to be different. And some of you are going into the ministry, and some of the situations we'll be having you work through are not going to necessarily be leading a ministry or overseeing a ministry from the standpoint of a leadership position. But we're going to have some case studies where you'll be looking into how can I have a ministry on the job? How can I have a ministry in a church situation? How can I have a ministry within my apartment complex or neighborhood? And so hopefully the purpose of this workshop, and then tomorrow we're really going to be blessed to have Harold Bullock with us to field some of your questions. Today is going to be hopefully getting you more in touch with the life situations and the factors, the differences in lifestyles between what we're dealing with on the college campus and what we will be dealing with when we're thrust into life beyond graduation. And then tomorrow, hopefully, will be more of the instruction and more of the input of answering questions. But as I was thinking, why even begin to prepare? There were several things scripturally that came to mind, and really this is all as far as biblical content that we're going to have in the workshop. But first of all, was just the fact that, you know, God is not a God of confusion. From the very beginning in Genesis to the end in Revelation, when he's laying out the dimensions of what the new heaven is going to be like, he is a God of order. And Paul said it so well in 1 Corinthians 14:33 that God is not a God of confusion. And so as you begin preparing, we don't want you to be leaving the college campus confused. And yet this doesn't mean there's not going to be times of haziness, times of lack of knowledge, times of lack of vision as to where I go and what I do, but that overall you'd have some direction, because the God that we love and serve and know is not a God of confusion. And then another thing is that God really does bless planning ahead. Luke 14, Larry touched a little bit on this, but a few verses down from the verse that he mentioned in verse 26, I think it's around 34 and 35, Luke is writing and sharing some of the words of Christ when he said, if you're going to go in and build a tower, you need to have thought through what's going to be needed. And time again in Scripture, thinking through and planning ahead really is advocated. And it's really something that's on God's heart and, as Christ said, on his heart, that we would be people that would plan ahead and think ahead. And then another very, very logical thing is that if you get the target, if you get the objective out there, it's going to be a lot easier to aim at and to hit. And over and over and over, Paul mentioned these, 1 Corinthians 9:27, where he says, I run in such a way as to win. I buffet my body that I might win and not be a castaway. And probably another verse you're familiar with, Philippians 3:14, I press on toward the mark. And sure, you'll have to filter out your own world as you get out and begin to be established and set roots. But if you can have some firm foundational principles that you've at least projected through and thought through, I really believe it'll make it a lot easier. And so that's the purpose of the workshop. I was thinking this week about all the different transitions I've made, and it hasn't been so much vocationally. I've been in student work, seems like all my life. It's been about 7 years now. But probably the major transitions came through when I was younger at home. My family moved about every 5 years. And just about after the fourth year, we began planning a move. And one of the things that we always did, my parents would always tell us that as we began packing to move, that we had to clean out our room and we had to throw out so many of the things that we wouldn't necessarily need. And that was always kind of a traumatic situation. But my brother had to go through his things and cull out the things that were extras. My sister had to do that. I had to do that. And there was always the things that we left behind as we moved. It was always a time of culling out the non-essentials and taking with us the essentials. And it was also the same way with the house. If we moved to a house that had less bedrooms, we were usually culling out some of the furniture. But we always had the time of evaluating what were the real essentials that we needed as we moved. And this is really the way that you'll be doing as you begin to move on, of evaluating what are the things that I'm really going to need. What are the principles, especially concerning ministry and the convictions that I will really need to take with me beyond the college campus. So this is all real fast and in a hurry. We're all almost over time a little bit. We have a lot to do. But the thing I want us to do now, Angela, if you could give these to the girls. You'll excuse me for playing stereotypes, but the guys get blues and the girls get pinks. And let's say again, if you could work through this in twos, I think it would facilitate time, and that it also, you would be able to brainstorm and bounce off ideas. This is two case studies, or maybe I should say profiles, of Mary and Joe College and Mary and Joe Graduate. It's the same person, but the same person in a different lifestyle and a context. And then on the last page, the green sheet, what I'd like for you to do together is to list the differences in the lifestyles of, like, Joe College and Joe Graduate, Mary College and Mary Graduate, and write out the differences, the different factors in the lifestyle. And I've given you some that you can go by in terms of her time or his time, the living situations, and any others that you think of as you read through this. And then we'll get back together and begin to get in touch with some of the most distinctive factors that are going to be different.
I
Okay, let's share what were some of the, what would you say is the overall difference? If you were to have to summarize, what would you say? Fellowship?
Time.
Okay. What were you thinking of? Whoever said, was it Greg? Yeah.
He had real close relationships with four students. That was his room. His peers there. Yeah, it sounded like a work and even at the church he's going to after he graduated, he didn't have real close relationships.
Yeah.
Maybe. He just walked into a ministry at the dorm because if he hadn't started, someone else would have, and there was already kind of a nucleus that had weighed into, but it worked.
We forget how good those little handful of cards at the beginning of the year are of those that want to get involved in a Bible study. Okay, I'd say that's for sure.
Well, somebody mentioned like a time that, I don't know, I might kind of disagree with that because, like, it seems like even though you graduated and you're on it now, you know, like in school, you might just spend part of the afternoon studying.
You have a word of testimony on that, George?
Because you're working 40 hours a week, and I promise you, nobody stays and goes to school 40 hours a week if you add it up. You might, but I never have. When I added up my schedule, at the maximum, I'd study 20 hours a week.
It might be interesting to see that. Pat, do you have a...
Well, plus she has to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and drive, I mean, that big highway drive, and just the physical exertion of being on your feet for 40 hours, or, you know, the pressure there is continual. It's not off and on.
Yeah, a lot of this would depend on the location. Like my dad, I took part of this from my dad. They live in Houston right now, and this is not every day, but some days when the traffic is bad, he spent as much as 2 hours one way. And so you talk about cutting your, that's not every day now, but it might be interesting to see, you know, if you were to calculate hour-wise, but.
I know, like Kathy, when she started working, she only had like about 3 hours a day for ministry. You know, 3 hours, three times she could plan, like, for whatever ministry, whatever, you know, or in school, and then you can just have lunch with somebody.
Time's less flexible too, isn't it, when you start working?
Yeah.
There's real rigidity.
You can skip a class and go buy a present for your mother or something. You can't say, excuse me, I've got to skip work. I've got to get a present for my mother.
Or unless there's just one or two classes offered at a certain time, you can arrange your classes, you know, to meet at 12 or.
Yeah, he could schedule that time, have Zach and Trey do whatever he wanted to. Like Greg said, you're a regiment and you have work, you're stuck there 8 to 5.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about the...
her time use. I said that she has more responsibilities. She has to schedule her own life. She has to cook her own food, pay her own bills.
Mm.
So that will affect her time.
Yeah. Even though he is finished by 7, did I say that? There's still, you know, the chores of washing and cleaning house and... So that adds up.
Wouldn't you think that this would matter? See, she's speaking from a certain major, microbiology, as opposed to maybe somebody who doesn't have as many labs, maybe family living, they wouldn't have quite as many labs.
Yeah, that might be true.
That might be true. I was just speaking for myself, so that might be right.
That's probably true, hour-wise, because labs and an extra.
No,
this is good. We need this discussion like this. What any other major thing that I just listed a few that maybe you thought of?
Go ahead.
Paige? I think that's really true. Just the matter of kind of the college identity. You know, it's always kind of can pick up someone to go play racquetball or study. People just understand you. And when you get out, there's so many different lifestyles and backgrounds and ages that you're thrown in with. It's Mm-hmm. That's true.
She could have had a ministry
if she'd gone.
She
should have gotten married. Well, that's good, Jane, because you're thinking ahead of what we're going to be getting into, of what it's going to take, you know, to identify and, you know, either to move into a singles complex or to find ways to identify more with the marrieds.
Also, your contacts outside of the dorm life are more formal. Because you can't just drop in on anyone at any time. Because
yeah,
they
that's
have
true.
Their own lives.
Well, I've experienced that with the apartments. You know, the dorms, the doors are open, man. You just go in. If they're not open, you open them. You
know? And it's accepted, except yeah, for the ground.
But in the apartments, you know, it's hard to get to know people. It really is. You know, cause sometimes they can't hear you knocking because the music's so loud. You know, it's just real. It's a real difference. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have
a
feeling that maybe
like-hearted.
That little gentle pressure of meeting for Bible study, you are going to get it done. But if you're just set your goal yourself, isn't it easy to put it off for yourself?
Inner time with God was restricted.
Yes.
So that's the major factor.
Right.
I said, you know, if you don't get your devotional time with the Lord, you know, things start falling apart.
I think the part about discipleship stuff is more of a choice. See, I mean, the people out there are hungry. Just go out there and start witnessing to people. Just, you know, find somebody who's leaving Christ. You can start from scratch. You don't have to try to get somebody out of the church. And,
mm-hmm.
That's a lot of stuff.
I found when I moved out to Seattle for a few months, I guess that was probably my most realistic situation to being away from professional Christian ministry. But I would share with people, you know, just the need to get with them and, like, review scriptures. And maybe I came on at a level that was too deep for them. But I found some people, it wasn't necessarily that they weren't interested, but the idea of spiritual accountability, they just weren't exposed to that. And so I had to kind of back off. And I really, that idea of working together and helping and that just the matter of spiritual accountability was not real prevalent. Well, I backed off, and then I just finally approached, and we began sharing what we were getting out of our quiet times. But even that was...
Did they start falling into place then?
No, I finally met someone else that had a like heart. But I was thinking of this. It was a student that I met that was kind of coming up through the ranks of the BSU. But in my Sunday school class, it was...
How would you suggest that?
Well, for me, I think the best thing was for me to back off and just to begin sharing out of my life and to realize that was a personal need that I had. I wasn't personally disciplined enough to keep going, and I just had to realize it was a time that God was letting me see the depth of my own. And so not to put demands on other people, but over a period of time, I really did diligently begin praying for a spiritual partner that I could have that accountability with.
But do you think that any one of us in here are self-motivated enough that we can go on our own for very long
without having
somebody
else to
be accountable to?
I think it's hard. I think there are some people that discipline does come more easily with, but I think it's probably a rare person. You may have something to add on that, Carolyn.
No, I think there are few Noahs in existence. What do we do if he puts us in a situation?
Really. And there was another time when I lived in Waco, and that's when I really developed a friendship with Carolyn. If there was no one in town that I knew, I'd try to find someone in the closest town and take off on the weekends. And
that's one of the concerns that I have going to Spain, is that I'll be separated from the rest of the group. I'll be on my own. She's Spanish-speaking students and a student from another country, and it's like being in the desert. And so I know God's going to really teach me a lot of things through that.
Well, would y'all feel it was putting pressure on somebody if you said, you don't need to do any of this, but I'm desperate for you to hold me accountable for it?
I think if you really approached them as a servant, that helped a little bit. I need you.
What I've done in the past is I go, hey, I'm trying to memorize this. Would you look over this while I say it to you? And they say, sure. And then they say, what do you do this for?
Then you win a hearing. Is there any other? Not that I'm trying to.
I don't know if this would have gone out, but anytime like in discipling process, like disciples or something, maybe change the person discipling. But I mean, you're still friends with the old person. And something important is you've always got somebody who can help you all the time. Even if you're far away, maybe you correspond to you. For me myself, that would be enough just on my conscience that it would be.
Yeah, I would say do whatever you need to do to be attached to someone, even if it's a long distance telephone call, every 2 weeks or what. But okay, Carolyn. Explain this next thing.
Once you explain it,
Okay. Pass this out.
Next thing
we're going to be doing is projecting you into three different lifestyle situations. And here again, I'd like for you to divide up into twos. The way we'll go through this, we'll give you about 10 minutes to work through this first one on the job, and then we'll come back together and discuss this. And then we'll go into the next two. But read through that together. And then the bottom thing is for you to come up with some approaches of penetrating this area.
I think they were listening.
Would you do that again, please?
Okay. In your pairs, just take this first one, being on the job. And the best way that you can get the mileage out of this is to try to really project yourself into this. Now, it'd be hard for me because I'm not in business at all, but to go on and to just try to really visualize yourself in this situation, get in touch with feelings perhaps that you would have, read through it, and then answer these bottom questions. Basically, it's going to be, what would be some approaches to having an impact or ministry in the job situation? So read through at least the information that you're given, and then brainstorm together on some possible approaches and what would you begin with? And then this last question, where would you put your priority efforts? In other words, what would be your first area of attack? What would be your second? So we'll give you about 10 minutes on this, and then we'll come back together.
Thank you.
Okay, are you ready? Let's talk about, first of all, we want to talk about possible plans, then priority efforts, and then what kind of character qualities are you going to need to pull this kind of thing off? Okay? So, what possible... You've been reading all the rest of them? Oh, no, we're just doing one at a time.
Okay.
See, it's 10 minutes. This is on this one, then we'll give you 10 minutes on the next one, then 10 minutes on the next one. So, okay, just on this one, we want to brainstorm for about 7 minutes, and
And I'd like if we just give a circular response so that we hear at least one statement from everybody on what would be a possible plan. So, Angela, what would be one possible plan?
Well, first I'd probably invite the Christian who seems dedicated to have lunch with me to meet with me for breakfast or something.
Okay. She's going to try to relate to the Christian. Ed?
We'd probably do something after his work or something with him. Maybe go out and have a Coke or something. Get them out of those things.
Okay. Invite them to have a Coke. Now, would they be used to going for Cokes?
Well, I don't know.
Having worked in that environment, I'd say no. But I have a Coke anyway, whatever else they had. So you get two Cokes. If it's if it's happy hour, you get two Cokes while they have whatever. Okay.
Okay, after you've been...
If you'll kind of filter it. If they tell, go ahead and go on down to one of your possible plans. Trying to build a team.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go for it. Okay. Angie?
Mine, I guess, is back to the very dedicated one. I would, if he was really dedicated, I would get him to pray about, like in the morning before work, we could just get...
At the office?
3 or 4 minutes.
Okay. Now, the only thing I'd say about that, people that I've seen pray at the office, sometimes they're offensive to the other people. If they're real young, I find another place. Because if the person you're praying with is kind of young, I mean, they'll just pray right in front of the people that are coming in. God, deliver them from hell. And sometimes that can be offensive. So if you have to, even call them on the phone. That was the recommendation in this situation. Could I call you on the phone and we could pray for them and see? And two people have come to know the Lord in that office. So that's good. Pray with a person that is committed with you.
Well, I think if you made friends with those three, you might just see if they might be interested in starting to meet for a Bible study.
These Christian friends... Okay, now, let me ask y'all a question. Would that ostracize you at all? Would it cut you away from the other group?
What do you mean, the others at work?
The others at work. Yeah, how could you keep that from happening?
Just at the same time, always speak with other
people. Okay. Okay, good idea. Be real available. Try to do your errands some of the time so that you can, on your breaks, you can spend with the non-Christians. And also maybe even plan to go. Would you plan to go to work early so you could be around there when they're fixing coffee? Diane?
Well, I would start praying that God would draw me close to at least one of those persons. Maybe with the more developed Christian, you start getting with them one-to-one. And then maybe encourage that person to get with at least one of the other persons or both of them on the one-to-ones. Really start. My thing, you know, this would be a long time before we're there, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a goal to shoot for.
Uh huh. Okay. Now?
I just read a book recently. It's by Eric Fromm, a Christian book. Talked about how, especially in workplaces, people feel like they're part of a machine. And like a factory, you know, you have your non-human machines and you've got your human machines, and they're all together working as a machine. Well, if people think they're machines, then they're going to treat each other like machines and talk about work, and that's all they're talking about. So if you really get with someone and talk with them about something besides work, something besides, you know, just the general things that people talk about, and really try to get to know them, you know, it's quite surprising. They might get interested in them.
That's good. One seminary student in Fort Worth recently, when he was evaluated at his job at the bank, when he got up, he asked the interviewer or the personnel, whoever she is, may I ask you a question now? And she said, yes. And he said, how are you doing personally? She goes, I don't talk of religion at work. He goes, no, I just meant you. How are you doing? And it deeply touched her. She said, nobody cares how I'm doing. So he's really right. Just ask one question and see if people don't really respond tenderly to something.
Lisa and I kind of talked about some lifestyle evangelism on the job. It's a real big factor because when things get hot and hectic, you can really have an impact just by the way you react, the way you know, the way you don't cuss out somebody, or the way you react when somebody cusses you out. And going to break and crucifying the ball.
Good. So being patient and also not being a gossip. Mm-hmm. Good. Very good. Lisa? What?
Lisa and I talked about that again.
Oh, okay. Katie?
Two things real quick. The first thing would be that...
we'll take one first and then come back.
Oh, okay. That... person would work to set a good pace in giving a lifestyle of working, you know, being dedicated to work.
Amy, I think we ought to write that down. To be the hardest worker on the job, people will ask you
and
questions.
To come back, and if you have, because of that hard work, you're going to get some things done. And then you, you know, if you've got a few minutes before break, you know how some people just quit and then they'll start talking. Use that time to help somebody else finish their work up so that they can.
Yeah, very
it
good.
But it works.
What do you do about
really
the people
works.
that, you know, like when you do a good job, you know, they look at you and they say, you know, this person is making us look bad. So, yeah, right.
Because, you know, because
you got to kind of adapt to their lifestyle.
No.
No.
I think you've got to explain. And like she said, if you reach out and help them, if you're not always trying to promote yourself, you work hard for yourself, and then you if you reach out and try to help them finish a project, they're still going to call you you know, I mean, a lot of times teachers would call and just say, oh, you're too straight. And students, when I was working the Black, so they said, you work so hard, you're a fool. I mean, they just,
really
they'll just tell you.
It really made a lot of difference when I finished with my work and my student teaching. I
helped
the assistant teacher get her stuff done, and so we were able to leave early. And she goes, man, she made a comment. She goes, it's so nice to have someone.
Good.
I know, it's a lot. I see what Ed's saying, because I've experienced that a lot, and a lot of my friends have, especially on construction jobs. I had a friend whose foreman told him to go in one of these big culverts and sleep for 10 hours a day, get paid $7, $6 an hour. Honest to God, show up for lunch, and then take off. But they'd start something in the morning, all load up in the truck, the shovel, and take off, go do something for an hour, and then all divide up and go sleep, you know, like that. What do, you know? The guy... He mentioned something to the foreman. He says, there's something else I can do. There's a job I can do. He says, do you want to keep your job? You shut up. It's very common.
Well, what do y'all suggest? What do you guys suggest? I don't think a girl would run into that. What do you suggest, Jeff?
I think you got to take you. Once again, you're responsible to do it under the Lord, not under me. I'm telling you, I'm going to work. I'm paid this much money. You know, of course, you're
mind, kindness, and truth around your neck. But tell him, you know, I'm, you know, sir, I feel like, you know, I'm getting paid to do this job, and I really want to work, and you know, I'm going to work.
Or maybe appeal to him as you would an elder.
Tell him one.
Give him an alternative. You know, I could do this and this and this. Look around for stuff you could do instead of sleeping in the cold room. But that's a hard deal. Greg.
Well, one thing, which it depends on the circumstance, kind of. If the guy who's dishing out the money, paying your salary, tells you to go to sleep, you know, you're working for him, and that's part of your job, in a way, in a sense. If it's like there's too many chiefs and not enough Indians, you know, or like if somebody else tells you, you know,
that is dishonest, isn't it? That is collecting for nothing.
In that situation, is it good to go with their heads? Is that what folks are paying these guys money to do?
Well,
Well, I see what Greg is saying, though. If it's the boss that tells you. I mean, I see what he's... It's not like a foreman or something. It's the boss.
But doesn't Scripture... Yeah, maybe just ask God to give you ideas of how to get in another environment or how to deal with that environment. Because Scripture says, if you don't work, you should not eat. So then what would you do if the guy tells you not to work and the Scripture tells you don't eat if you don't work? What are you going to do? Just starve in that job?
I think that if you stood up for that conviction, you know, I'm not saying...
You'd get fired.
Probably pure about it. I mean, to the person when you're explaining to him, you know, this is what I really feel like I'm being honest and going to sleep and getting paid for doing work. And if he you know, gives you the axe, well, I think God's going to honor you.
God may be moving you to a new job.
And he also the same thing, be appealing to his conscience, saying, look, it is not right. The Bible says.
Well, I don't know.
Appealing to his conscience. Appealing,
yeah, but
striking with the sword.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I know I've heard Gene say sometimes, maybe not always quote the Bible says,
right,
but just telling him where you're, you know, this is the principle behind which I've got to operate. He might be a little afraid to fire you. Because you're so honest, you might tell the boss.
Is there the option of working all you can and then leaving? Maybe you could have another job. You have to stay there the whole time.
Probably have to stay. Weird. But that's a good point. That's one. Brenda, you have a...
What we're talking about, like how you said, really be a servant to the people and stuff.
Okay, we'll go on to Greg. Let's see if you can think.
Okay. I got heard Tom Wong say tithes is work time, like works 40 hours a week, he tithes that time, you know, and it's been 4 hours a week with non Christians doing non Christian activities. And see if that work very easily.
For lunches or something.
Yeah.
Mhm. Right. I think his was he works 60 hours a week and tithes 6 hours.
Yeah.
So he makes himself spend 6 hours with non-Christians.
Yeah, and also he says that he doesn't always know it's not 6 hours every week. It averages out that way.
Yeah, good. Maybe he'll save it up and do a big party.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or you could maybe volunteer to be on the, if the boss is going to give a Christmas party, you volunteer to help. Maybe you could do a mixer and you could just throw in something. It'll make people think about Jesus. Hardy?
Well, I was going to say it's kind of on the lines of Greg, that softball league and bowling league going up.
Very good. Then you have to sit there with them 4 hours a week. We did that in a complex. The whole complex was in this bowling league. So they had to spend 4 hours a week with us. Or we didn't. George?
The first thing that came to mind when I read over this was just to get established in your work and to make sure that you're doing a good job at your work. And then from there, build the relationships.
Okay. Good. Jeff, you have anything?
Well, other than most of the things we covered, one thing is kind of one thing I've seen, like in any job working, you get to share with some of the people. It is so, you know, I think really need to pray against the schemes of the enemy. Because a lot of times I've noticed, you know, you'd be sharing with somebody and things will be going real well. All of a sudden, they get transferred somewhere. So real pray against that.
Good.
You know, you never see them.
Mhm. That's good. So establish prayer. Go after trying to draw the Christians together. Have a standard of excellence at work. Serve. Nobody said this, but usually, see, seniors, they're pretty looked up to, and they're asked a lot of questions with younger students. And when you get on the job, you are the youngest thing around. And it might be wise to make a point, even though you might even know how to do things better than they do, to be open and teachable and figure out how you could be a learner to the older people.
I think it's really, if you, especially older people in the job, if you ask them questions, even if, like you said, just ask them questions and just really ask them to teach them. Boy, I appreciate that.
Yes.
Because, you know, to a lost person, their job is their life.
That's right.
And so if you start hedging in on their turf, you know, they can really get mad at you. Mm-hmm.
That's
also
good.
Something I found working last summer was like, you know, I can teach them stuff I knew about the Bible, but then there were questions about life, kind of like what Jeff was saying, that I just flat dad didn't know. Mm-hmm. And like, this is when princes die and mm-hmm. space got married. And there was stuff I didn't understand about all this king and queen stuff. And, you know, I can ask them and they can answer me. And they, you know, they, that was a real neat.
Good. So make yourself vulnerable.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to move to the next one if we're going to get these finished. So if you'll take a few minutes and then we'll go over this. In your church. How are we going to do this? You've got to hold this time. Huh? Okay, I'd say you're through fairly well, so let's just brainstorm real quickly on the possible plans and then where your priority efforts would be. Anybody, quickly.
Mm-hmm. Something that came back to me, especially since we were talking about being submissive, that last thing I uh-huh. said in this one, is the man who spoke that was from the church, one of the vespers that we had that talked about discipling in the church, and he said the thing that he respected the most was not someone who came in from this great ministry and did nothing but talk about how great the ministry was before,
mm-hmm.
but that submitted themselves to and asked what he could do and didn't come in with a whole bunch of really great plans and how much better they were spiritually and all that stuff. So I think that would be, for me, the first thing to make sure that my heart is right on.
That'd be good, to make an appointment with the pastor and tell him you would like to serve him. And now when you do that, sometimes you need to figure out, now how many hours am I going to put into the church? Because you also have an apartment complex and you have the work. So if you say I'm going to serve and then they put you on 9 committees and you can't do it, so figure it out. In the past, when I was working and going to graduate school, I would say, I want to do anything you want me to do, but I only have 4 hours. Do you want me to pray? Do you want me to go visit? What do you want me to do?
Do we have questions on brainstorming or do you on brainstorming?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. The question that came to mind on that when he shared that was, say like you go there and say, I'll do anything, and they put you in charge of a bunch of tasks that you don't think that you ought to be doing. Like, I don't think I'd be very good at working preschool workers.
But if you did that for a while, if you would do that, though, and show that you're willing to be a servant where they needed you, they will really listen to you.
I think one approach would be to the Sunday school teacher and say that you will be a servant to them. I want to serve some way in our singles department. Because I was in a singles department last summer, and it might be, like George said, they won't put you in preschool. They'll do something where you can start working in the, you know, if it's...
Okay, well, yeah, so maybe you could give your preference, but if they need somebody in preschool, sometimes that really wins hearts when you're willing to serve where nobody else will do it for a time. And but I think what he's saying is don't let people plan your life. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that you can make yourself vulnerable to be the gopher for everything. Like, we want you to do this task and this one. And pretty soon they've got you just doing all these busybody stuff, and you don't have time to, for your own spiritual life.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, if you'll give them so many, this is all the time I have. In light of that, what would you like me to do?
Well, could you kind of share some of your objectives, or is it too early?
I think it'd be too early. Let them ask you. When you go do one task really well, they'll
ask.
It's
just the attitude of the heart, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think it'd be good, too, like if the Sunday school teacher find out what his objectives are for the class. And if he wants to see the class grow, then say, I'll be glad to visit with him.
Okay, good. Find out. And don't, if they say, well, I don't have any objectives, don't go, well, God, you're really stupid. You ought to be someplace else. Just say, well, you know, whatever. I just want to help you be successful.
Or, you know, like you said, one thing I think is just to pray for people. Intercession is one of the biggest, the best ministries you have if people don't think of it as a ministry. It's just intercede for people and just go to maybe the, some different people in the class, maybe the two people they're starting a relationship with, and say, what can I pray for you? Just, I want to pray for you this week. Would you make me a list of what I can pray for you and your teacher? You know? Just that ministers to a lot of people. You know, it's just pretty
cool. Or sometimes people think something's wrong if you want to pray for them. So you have to be, well, what do you, what's wrong? What do you think's wrong with me? Go ahead.
Also, like, if you go to some of their fellowships and try to serve, like, you know, they're having a hot dog supper, well, you can be the one that sits there and does the chili and all the stuff, and they'll notice you will get to be friends if you're always if you're always serving the department you're in, to, you know, not notice.
Okay. Pam, what did you have?
I was, something that Walt shared at the Glen was so helpful to me, I had never seen it before, but that when people aren't doing something or aren't picking up on something, to don't necessarily assume that it's just lack of rebellion on their part. It may be just a lack of understanding or perspective. And so, like, to go into a situation, I think Pat said it so well, first, not to assume, well, you know, I have it all together and they don't. But maybe there is a lack of understanding on the need of the body. And so over a period of time, as you gain a hearing, maybe someone could come in. Maybe there just needs to be teaching on the need for a commitment to the body. And I know I've been in circles before where it just wasn't kind of the end thing to share scripture verses or to share what you were learning out of your quiet time. And it wasn't necessarily that the people weren't having a quiet time, but they just weren't sharing from their quiet time. Does that make sense? And so maybe it's just a matter of you beginning to introduce it or letting them be exposed to it. It's not so much a matter of rebellion or them just not wanting to do it. It just needs to be learned or taught.
Along with that, how much should we do in class? I mean, like, we could participate and teach if we wanted to. I mean, the teacher's trying to teach. We could start saying something and just rattle on for 30 minutes. But, you know, how much should we do in the class?
What do y'all think?
I think you better play it cool.
Maybe your speech should be sprinkled with salt to make them kind of thirsty.
Yeah, throw out things that'll just puzzle them. They'll have to ask you afterwards, what were you talking about, Alan? Then you get a live one because you know they're hungry.
Also, if you listen to other people's comments, then you can learn a whole lot about where they are instead of always spouting your own. Then you know where they're strong and where they're weak.
George had a good insight, too.
What's that, George? Tell us, George.
It was something that Lewis Hill said when I got to talk to him at Glen Eyrie, and he said that when I asked him what my main objective should be to go to Montana, and he said, my main objective should be for me to get my quiet time down and for me to get established and not to go up there thinking I'm just going to blow everybody away with all the stuff I've learned down here at this BSU and all the training. And then after I get that, then the overflow from that will come out into their lives, and that will be my ministry. Not to go up there to have a ministry, but the overflow out of my own personal life and personal walk.
Big responsibility, George.
Right. Okay, any other thoughts on this one?
I think, this is not to condemn them for what they don't know or what they are practicing, but to accept them wherever they are, to be willing to walk with them where they are, not try to get ahead of them and pull them or get behind them and push them, but just to walk with them where they are, and then to be teachable, to ask them questions, maybe like in the Sunday school class, as you're listening and not to spout off your knowledge, but to maybe something you're struggling with, to ask them their ideas of how you can learn. Mm-hmm. So really be teachable.
Okay, good. Identify Luke 24:15. I think she's getting that from Jesus. It says, and as they walked and conversed, he joined them and accompanied them.
There's a couple in our church, a young couple, who work with the high school kids, and one of the main things they do, they just make themselves available. And their home was open, and the kids knew any time they wanted to come by and just talk, they could. And things that, like the ones who, I'm thinking of one person in particular who, was completely alienated from parents. She could go over there and talk to them about what was really on her mind. And it turned out she came to the Lord and was walking with them.
So now this could cost you, though, right? In time and in money, meals, and then time where you just spend with the Lord yourself.